All right, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We welcome once again to the program, dear listeners. It is the CAR program. Joining us today telephonically on the line is Brother Abdul Haq Rada. We'd like to welcome him, inshallah, on the program. Abdul Haq, my brother, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Mawlana, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to all our listeners out there. Jazakumullahu khairan, Mawlana, once again for the opportunities. Alhamdulillah, we are sort of available to try and assist in any which way, as far as the modern needs are concerned. We will do our best to answer your questions, inshallah.
I mean, jazakumullah for that. All right, Brother Adil is on a holiday. We're not going to trouble him today, but dear listeners, Abdul Haq is there to answer the questions. Yes, dear listeners, it's your phone-in program. The number to call for the program is 011-8541548. And the SMS numbers are, it's 082580870. 082580870. And inshallah, call us on the number again, 8541548. 4885 is also the SMS number, but preferable that you come live on the program. All right, to continue, inshallah. Abdul Haq, the first question coming through, let's take this one here, my brother. I'm just trying to get the question. Apologies for the delay, slight delay. The one saying that how does one test the exhaust pipes to see whether it needs to be changed or not?
Malana, very, very good question. Alhamdulillah. Remember, exhaust pipes is something that gets rather hot. So it is important that we do take some sort of precaution as far as that is concerned. Typically, what we do, you can try it. It's not something that's that hectic. What I would do is take a nice, biggish rag, fold it over a couple of times, start the vehicle up, let it be on idle. Please don't rev it up. Let it be on idle. You can go to the back of the exhaust. All you do is you cover the exhaust, not allowing any air to escape. And obviously, once you've closed it up, you will hear, the hissing and a loud hissing sort of sound. And then obviously, you know that your exhaust system is leaking. I wouldn't also advise that you hold it close for too long. I mean, within 15, 20 seconds, you'll exactly know what's happening. So don't keep it closed for very long, because you might end up getting a bit burnt or something. And the other thing is, keep your face away from there, because when you take the rag off, the cloth away from the exhaust system, then you're bound to inhale a fair amount of fumes. So just keep your face away and at an angle, and you just put your rag over the end of the on the tailpiece, blocking the exhaust for any gases to escape, and that should give you an indication if there is any leak on your exhaust system. And if there is, obviously, it is important and imperative that we have that repaired rather sooner than later, because what happens is, I know there is some belief regarding exhaust systems. If they are leaking, the car tends to use a bit more fuel, and it does mess around with the efficiency to some sort of extent, yes.
Okay, jazakumullah. The brother's got a Jeep Grand Cherokee 6-cylinder Abdul Haq. What he says is that when I make the turn, the car loses power, the engine revs, and the gas petrol pedal doesn't accelerate the Jeep. After the turn is done, the car jerks roughly and goes on down the road like normally. Only really happens in normal turns, not the small ones. What could be the problem, Abdul Haq?
See, Mona, look, first of all, we don't know if it's automatic or manual. Right, very, very important. On a manual vehicle, obviously what happens is sometimes when you do go into a bend, we leave the accelerator a little bit, or press the brake, and immediately, when we're halfway through the bend, that's how we normally drive, is we accelerate. And if it is a manual, then the possibility exists that you've got some sort of, I wouldn't say clutch failure, but some slippage on your clutch itself. And with the result, what is happening is the car is revving up, it's over-revving, but you've got no motion. The other thing, also with the automatic gearboxes, we had, recall in the very, very old Hondas, when you came around the corner, somehow, if your oil level in the gearbox was incorrect, but that was with the older vehicles, if the oil level was incorrect, and you came around the corner somehow, for some unknown reason, one of the hydraulic valves within the system that's supposed to be what we call a non-return valve to hold pressure in the system released the pressure for some unknown reason, and with the result you had lack of gear, and that would give you that sluggishness. And immediately when the vehicle came to a straight drive again, you got your gears back. And that simply happened because what happened is sometimes the oil in the gearbox, as you take a bend, the oil moves over to one side. People may not believe that, but you know, you take a glass of water and you sort of spin it around, hold it in your hand and turn it around. You'll notice that the one side of the water actually is higher than the other side. So that is where that was a problem as well. The other thing could be more on obviously the fuel. As far as the fuel is concerned, if your fuel pump is not efficient enough, or like in most other vehicles, you do have what we call a double-sided tank, and the fuel from one side is not going over onto the other side because the pump is not working efficiently and effectively, you may be what we call like a coffee percolator. You know, the fuel is percolating and you're getting in a fair amount of air and a lot less fuel in the system, and with the result, when the vehicle straightens up and the pump is fully submerged again, that is when the air comes out of the system and your vehicle is running normally again. More than that, maybe there could be some other issues, but unfortunately, I can't think of anything immediately.
Okay, all right, jazakumallah. Let's continue, inshallah. The brother says he's got a 2012 Ford Fiesta that only blows cold air when you apply the petrol pedal. When you stop in a position, it blows hot air. He wants to know what could it be.
Cold air while driving with the fan on, or
doesn't say much.
Off? You see, there could be a couple of scenarios. Maulana, what happens is, if the vehicle while driving is blowing in cold air, obviously, the heating system in the vehicle itself, more than likely, if you don't have a thermostat in the system, then you get a lot of cold air coming through the system. And when it's coming to, the air that comes out is obviously cold. When you come to a standstill, you don't need so much of circulation, for the water to heat up in the system. Then, yes, you're getting hot air coming through. Or there could be some issue with the regulation on as far as the heater valve is concerned. The circulation is the issue, but it could be a faulty heater valve that could be creating something like that as well.
Alright, jazakumallah. The brother wants your mashallah regarding this, some advice. He asks, how is power on a Honda Civic 1.8 VTEC? Is it good vehicle, 2012 model?
Alhamdulillah, Marana, very, very good vehicles. The 1.8 VTEC, also very, very nice, alhamdulillah. This is going to be a personal preference. Nothing to say that there is anything wrong with the 1.8. But I find your 1.6 almost the same as far as power is concerned, but more efficient as far as fuel is concerned, as far as the engine, the engine size is concerned, the 1.6 and the 1.8. But also, alhamdulillah, very, very nice vehicle. I've got quite a few clients that are actually driving them currently, and they said I couldn't have given them a better mashwara regarding these vehicles. So 1.6, 1.8, not much of a big difference in the two of the vehicles.
Okay. Just interesting, my brother, to give you the car value, the trade value, and the retail value. If you want to buy this car, it's a Civic 1.8 VTEC. Listen, my brother, it's a VXI. We're talking about a 5-door.
Yeah.
Civic 1.8i VTEC VXI 5-door. 2012 model. The trade is about 120,000 rand. And yes, obviously, but you're going to pay less for that, Abdulhaq. And the automatics are going for the 1.8 VI Tech VXI 5-door automatic. 2012, the trade value is approximately 130. Retail is approximately sitting at 150,000 rands. But yes, they are lovely. All right, to continue, inshallah. Number to call for the program. Number to call for the program is 011-854-1548. And the WhatsApp number is 0727861548, 0727861548, or alternatively 48855G. SMS comes through here. It says, what would cause the fuel tank to receive just a few cents of, or a few rands of gas at a time, petrol at a time? It actually happens to a brother, a friend of mine, Abdul Haq. He's got a Nissan Tira. What he says is that when it comes to three-quarter, it doesn't go more than that. So what could be the problem? Is there maybe some sort of an air release valve? If so, where could we find it?
Very, very good question. Alhamdulillah, there is a couple of scenarios again in this instance. First and foremost, you're filling the vehicle up and it only getting three-quarter tank. The question I would ask the person immediately is, what mileage are you getting on that three-quarter tank? If you're getting, your average, I think that is about a 50-55 liter tank. So you're looking at about 450 kilometers. If you're getting less than that, then obviously, it's not getting a full tank. And the reasoning behind that is, obviously you have a problem as far as the fuel gauge is concerned. Nine out of ten times, the fuel sender unit in the fuel tank itself, right, is lacking in contact as far as the other quarter tank is concerned, or there could be some dirt in between, or it's jammed to, it's jamming up to that certain point. The other thing is, the float is actually a plastic float. And what happens sometimes is if the float has a fault, it's a faulty float, then you get a bit of fuel that goes into there, and because of the fuel that goes into the float of the fuel level sensor, it doesn't allow the float to go all the way up. So that is why you're getting a reading of plus minus three quarters fuel in the system. The other thing also is you have on your instrument cluster, that is, on your dashboard, you could be having a problem with the needle there as well, the actual unit itself. The unit itself could be faulty, and with the result, it's not giving you a fuel reading. Yes, the other thing is also, like you mentioned, it could be what we call a breather within the fuel tank itself. I stand to correction, and in Nissan Tida, it is on top of the fuel tank. You actually have to remove the fuel tank on that particular vehicle. It's a little plastic valve that's there, and sometimes that blocks up as well and doesn't allow for breathing. So what happens is your air escape is not so easy, because it's not just something that would allow air escape, but obviously it allows for filling in fuel. So, it's like almost, otherwise if that valve was inefficient, you'll get what we call evaporation in the system itself as well. So it could be also that the pipe on the breather valve is kinked. If there's a kink in the pipe also, you're going to have a similar sort of problem. So yes, the only other way to do is, first I would suggest, that one you can remove the fuel tank sender unit, the Nissan Tida. Also under the seat there's a cover, the back seat, you remove the cover, and you unscrew the there's like a big plastic nut that holds it in place. You unscrew that, you remove the whole system from there, and obviously don't start the vehicle up, but you put your ignition on, and you can physically move the float itself. And if you move the float itself and you find that there is no problem, then obviously you either the sender unit, or more likely than the sender unit on the instrument cluster, it would be the breather valve that on the fuel tank itself. The other thing also, Marana, to check very, very important also is sometimes when you go over a, sometimes people drive over a pavement or a rock or something like that, hit something at the bottom of the vehicle, it could be that the tank is dented. And with the result, that also could create some issue. But I don't think in this instance that it will be something like that, because I know now they've moved over to plastic tanks and no more metal tanks. So, Jim, I would look at the petrol sender unit or the valve, either one of these two. The petrol sender unit will be easier to check in a tank because it's a quicker, easier operation. The breather valve would require a lot more removing of the fuel tank, and that is a lot more labor intense.
All right, Jazakumallah. A very interesting question the brother's got here. His car was stolen back, alhamdulillah. His car was recovered back, stolen some time ago. He wants to know how to get the police clearance to license it here in South Africa. And very, very important, dear listeners, regarding this here is, I'm going to mention very quickly, inshallah, what is the procedure of getting your car back here. So, dear listeners, Allah Tabarak wa ta'ala save us all, but in the unfortunate event that you fall victim to vehicle theft, it's important to know that even if they find your car, if the police recover your farm, it's not going to be simply returned to you. You can't just drive it again immediately. So according to law, for all the vehicles got to be presented to the SAPS CAM 13, I think in Lens, it's an extension 10, it's going to be presented to the SAPS to be cleared at the regional office, maybe where the car was originally registered as well. And if you don't acquire the police clearance, and many might not even know this, so you could face some serious issues of the hack, because
yeah,
what happens is
in the family we had that issue.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to renew your vehicle's license says you won't be able to transfer of ownership of the car. And most importantly, Abdul-Haq, what happens is this guy's going to arrest you, you know, because in the eyes of the law, you're driving a stolen vehicle. So what is very, very important, you listen, is you've got to clear the car there at the compound, and the investigating officer must remove the S-stamp. It's called the S-stamp.
Yeah.
And regarding this, you find that once the S-stamp is removed from the computers, then, dear listeners, you can start using the car, etc. But regarding this, we find that to avoid unnecessary trouble, also get a police clearance certificate in situations, for example, restoring or building up a car. You know, to make sure that none of the parts are stolen. Maybe you've got to change in the engine of the car. It's got to be updated on the electronic national administration traffic system called the eNATIS system. And also what happens is crossing borders. It's best to have your certificate to prove that the car isn't stolen, and so that you don't get into problems at the roadblocks, because sometimes, you know, it's just something that you can, you know, be in the wrong place, wrong time. It's your car, it's your everything, but just because of some intricacies, you know, you might just land into hot waters.
Just to bottom up, I'm just going to come in to reiterate, as far as the STEP is concerned on the computer system itself, I think it's very, very important that we acquire the documentation that proves that. And I would suggest if your vehicle was stolen and recovered or something like that, then, you know, get that documentation, make a copy of it, certify it, and keep it in the vehicle, because it happened to one of my family members. After 5 years of driving around the car, Morana, he was on his way with his family to Durban, and he was stopped somewhere near Villiers. They checked everything, and he says, no, you know what, this is a stolen vehicle, we have to impound your vehicle. Unfortunately for him, all right, but shukr alhamdulillah, we went over, we left the vehicle, we got him another vehicle, he left his vehicle wherever it was, at the police station in Villiers. And they came back to him and said to him, this thing was not cleared on the system. It is registered on the system, but it's not cleared on the system. So this is where the problem lies. So like you said, the S-stamp is where you need to make sure, get some sort of proof that it has been done, and you know, if possible, keep it with you wherever you, especially going on long distance and things like that, because otherwise you can end up with the family on the side of the road.
Okay. All right, jazakumullah. And if that happens, you can just see officer, you can take the lady with you.
Oh, yeah. No, but alhamdulillah, about 5 or 6 weeks later, after they cleared the system, yeah, the vehicle was given back to them, yes.
Okay. All right, to continue. So, I mean, just information I came across here, listeners, you know, it's regarding Bentley, how many SUVs they sold. But six interesting facts about South African car sales, basically some fun facts here. Regarding, as they say, that the Ford Ranger, you know, 17,014 units, is South Africa's best-selling vehicle, followed by the Toyota Hilux, 16,827, and third is the Polo, VW Polo Vivo, 12,464. Also interesting to listen is that by the end of June 2017, 61,772 new Toyotas found homes in South Africa, and VW to date has sold 43,584 units. Interesting, Toyota, all the way 61,000. Also, third factor, Volkswagen South Africa exported a total of 34,700 new vehicles in June. And also, Genesis, something interesting I came across, at 4 million rands, the Bentley Bentayga is the most expensive SUV on sale in South Africa. And Abdul-Haq, this guy's got big bucks here. But anyway, automaker has sold 15 units during the first half of this year, 2017. So it's going, the Bentley Bentayga, 4 million rands. It is the most expensive SUV on sale in South Africa. Also, Chinese manufacturer JMC sold the least amount of cars. It's only offering the Land Wind, found 46 new owners. And Abdul-Haq, this one, you know, we all know the Toyota Quantum. This is good stuff, you know. It's a preferred vehicle for the taxi drivers in South Africa. And so far in 2017, we find that approximately 7,583 Quantums have been sold. Some interesting facts. Gee.
No. You know, it's amazing. We look at this, you know, currently, as far as finances are concerned, you know, we find everybody saying everything's tight, but alhamdulillah, there are some people out there with good bucks, and alhamdulillah, they're buying the cars. So, yeah. Well, the other thing I've got is somebody sent me a very, very interesting question here. If I could give some sort of explanation, as far as Mazda has come up with something that's called Sky Active.
Okay.
Sky Active technology. So, see, Monona, believe it or not, it's got nothing whatsoever to do with the sky.
Okay.
It's just to do with the engine, and what we refer to is what we compression ratio. Compression ratio, in brief, I'll give you a quick explanation. Compression ratio, for example, we explained earlier in the program as far as the different strokes are concerned in the engine. You know, you've got your firing stroke, you've got your compression stroke, and all the different, it's a four-stroke engine, so you've got different four strokes. When the piston is at its lowest point, obviously there is a certain amount of vacuum in above the piston, between the piston and the cylinder head, and that is measured against when the piston is going right to the top of the cylinder head. So in other words, compression comes from where it compresses the air-fuel mixture. Alright? So if, for example, it compresses it 10 times to the original amount, then your compression ratio is 10 to 1. And what has happened with Skyactiv technology is they have, redefined these bores and pistons and things like that, and they have brought the compression ratio up to 14 to 1. That is four more. That's almost 50%. I would say about 40% more. And the higher the compression ratio, obviously, the better the efficiency of the motor vehicle. Obviously, with the high compression ratio vehicles like the Skyactiv and that, you have to use a high octane fuel because that can be compressed to its maximum. So what they've done is, as I said, they have now devised this technology within the engine system itself, and the system actually compresses the air-fuel mixture 14 times than its original state. And because it's compressed so much more, a minimal spark, and that explosion is so much bigger within the engine system that it pushes that piston so much quicker down. So your strokes become so much more quicker, and with the result, it is much more of a high-performance engine than your normal 10-to-1 compression ratio engines. And efficiency as well, because it compresses so much, and there's so much more energy when the explosion happens that you don't use up as much fuel. And I think Mazda has really come up with a brilliant technology as far as this Skyactiv technology is concerned.
All right, jazakumullah. All right, we continue to listen. Number to call for the program: 011-854-1548, and the WhatsApp number is 072-786-1548, and the SMS number is 48855. All right. A question coming through. It says, "Assalamu alaikum. I just heard a listener interested to buy Honda. Just wanted to share my experience. Took my daughter's Jazz for oil service at 2,200 at the agents, compared to my Porsche 911S at 2,800 at the agents. 2,200 for the Honda, 2,800 for the Porsche."
Okay, Bolana.
Porsche 911.
I appreciate the brother's explanation as far as that is concerned. I would love to hear from the brother, if you could come live on here, maybe you could ask him a couple of questions regarding the services, the difference between the two services that has come up. One could be just an oil service, the other could be a little more than an oil service. A lot of times we have this sort of questions and these debates and arguments regarding the differences as far as prices are concerned, as far as services are. And we found that, a guy has a major service in a vehicle, and the other vehicle has an oil service or oil change, and you cannot compare these two services. Because to my knowledge, if I had to look at the 911 at 2,800 Rand, they probably did an oil change service for him, and maybe an air filter or something like that. If you look at the Honda Jazz, they might have did a little more on that. So I am not saying Porsche is cheaper or whatever the maintenance is, but obviously you've got to look at what services were done, what was done on the service, before saying that service was cheaper. If in comparison they've done exactly what they've done on the Jazz, and they've done exactly what they said they've done on the Porsche, if they've done both the same service, then we can say yes, there is something like that. Generally we do have this problem as far as the general motoring public is concerned. They would come in and say, I need a service on my car. What service do you require? I mean, you look at Mercedes-Benz, you've got the A service, B service, C service, you've got so many different services on vehicles. So obviously you're going to have a difference of prices as far as services are concerned. For example, if you look at an A service and it's just an oil and oil filter change, that could cost you roughly about 1,200 to 1,500 Rand. But if you come in and say, you look at a major service where spark plugs are involved, air filters are involved, the cabin filter or the air conditioning filter is involved, all these things escalate the cost so much more. And then you might get the other service where you're driving an automatic vehicle, including the A, B, and then those two are included already. The C part of the service comes in maybe where you've got to do the gearbox oil, gearbox filter, the fuel filter. I mean, today, if you look at the Mercedes-Benz, for example, you're going to pay anything from $500 to $1,500 for a fuel filter. So obviously, that would escalate the price of the service. So you can't just say this service compared to this vehicle service, this is the difference. Because at the end of the day, what was done on the service is very, very important. And also, this is some advice to our listeners out there. You just don't walk into a place or a dealership or a workshop anywhere and say, listen, you know, I need a service. And if the guy asks you, what service do you need? You say, no, the general service, you know, the plugs, points, condenser. Points and condenser is a thing of the past. But obviously you cannot go in and you determine as to what the service, you know, what the service entails. It should be according to service schedule, and you'll find that all motor manufacturers, and I repeat, all motor manufacturers have a service schedule. Certain services require a certain amount of work. So don't just walk in there and say, you know, I think I need, I need everything done, plugs, points, and condenser. You never ever change plugs on every service. If you look at most of the vehicles, alhamdulillah today, with the platinum technology and the spark plugs itself, your spark plugs, you will probably change only every 60,000, 80,000 kilometers. So, you know, you go in there, a set of platinum spark plugs would set you back at least about $200 a piece. And at every service, if you're changing the spark plugs, you know, it's ridiculous because it doesn't need to be replaced. And unfortunately, we have people out there that are unscrupulous and will change the spark plugs for you and charge you for it. And with the result, it was not needed on the vehicle. So these are all these questions that we shouldn't just go out there and say, you know, my car requires this service or requires that service. If you've taken your vehicle in for a service, take a little bit of time off to read on the invoice or the statement or whatever it is, what has been done on the vehicle before you go for your next service. And if the guy phones you and says, but you know, you need spark plugs, and he says, no, whoa, just hold on. On the last service, I had my spark plugs done. Even if you take your ordinary vehicle with the ordinary spark plugs, if you look at your Toyota Caves, you know, you don't replace the spark plugs at every 15,000 kilometers. You will replace them at 30,000 kilometers. So, you know, it's not a thing of walking in there and say, I need a service, and they ask you, what service do you need? No, I need this. By saying what you need done, obviously he's taking it on face value, and, you know, as I said, there are unscrupulous guys out there. They will take you for a ride. They will replace unnecessary things. So it's important to follow a service schedule. You know, take a time out. Just look at your invoice, your last invoice, and it will give you an idea of what has been done, what hasn't been done. I mean, 90% of the time, you know, a client brings a vehicle in, and you know, you phone him up and says, look, the vehicle's got 100,000 or 105,000. Some of them got 105,000 where you need to replace the cam belt. And you ask him, you know, has anything been done? And he says, yeah, you know what? I think my cam belt was replaced at 50,000 kilometers, which was. Was it necessary? Was it, you know, it's all questions you should ask yourself. And with the result, you will notice that your services are not the same costs all the time.
All right, Jazakallah for that. We continue. The brother sends an SMS. Honda was oil and filter only. Jazakallah. We continue. Abdul Haq, the other question the brother's got here is that what are the causes, some of the causes that actually cause a spark knock or detonation?
I didn't get that question properly.
What are some of the causes of a spark knock?
Spark knock. That would the first culprit I would normally go to is you know, the octane of the fuel, the octane rating of the fuel that creates some sort of spark. You know, when they talk about spark knock, we would probably refer to it you know, in more simple terms as what we call pre-ignition. Pre-ignition comes from either, you know, your fuel, your timing, also the very, very importantly, the heat range on your spark plug. You know, it's very important. That's why I say, you know, things have got to be checked and make sure that they put the correct spark plug in there. I know that Toyota Tez loves doing that if you put in correct spark plug in there.
Right, Jazakumullah. The brother wants to know, couple of the book values and trade values. Let's go through them first, inshallah. The brother wants to buy a Mazda Soho. He said it's a 1.45 door. It's about 1998-1999 model. My brother, yes, trade is about 20,000, 18,000. You're going to pay about 22,000 for this Soho. Maybe a little bit more. If it's good condition, maybe about 25,000 max, I think, I would say. The other SMS coming through, the brother wants to buy a Mazda 2. The Hakhaus, a Mazda 2. It's a 1.5. You get them in 1.3s, 1.5s as well. It's a Mazda 2, 1.5 individual, 2007 model. I think the book is about 48,000 rands. 48,000 is good to
pay. Nice vehicle, man.
Okay.
Actually, I feel that the Mazda 2 is actually underrated. Very, very nice vehicle, rather efficient, rather nippy, and genuinely it averages out as far as maintenance is concerned as well. Very, very nice vehicle. I mean, I've driven a couple. I have a couple of clients who's driving these vehicles, and alhamdulillah, they are happy as well, and I found them rather, you know, parts also rather easy to find and things like that. So, yeah, very, very nice vehicle, alhamdulillah.
Look, the Mazda 2, the grain for, like we said, 2007 is about approximately 50,000 rands. The Mazda 3, 2.3, or rather the Mazda 3, 1.6s, say for example, 2007 model, the trade is about 57,000-58,000 rands. How's the Mazda 3 compared to the Mazda 2? Any you know, different features?
Yeah, look, obviously, it's a very slight sort of difference as far as those are concerned. The Mazda 2, like it says, you know, 2 and 3, it basically, the Mazda 2 feels a bit smaller as well. The Mazda 3, you might find a little, one or two added features here. I don't think the Mazda 3 comes in a 1.3 either. I'm not too sure about that, Manana. But yes, I know they come in a 1.5 as well. So there isn't much of a big difference as far as those particular things are concerned.
All right, JazakAllah, let's continue. We have approximately 7 minutes left before we terminate the program. The brother says, after replacing my flasher, my doors and windows don't work. Checked and double-checked all the connections on the fuse and the relay panel. All okay, and need some help here. So basically what's happening is, it's a Honda Odyssey, the windows and the door locks don't work.
What has he replaced, Marana?
The flasher.
The flasher unit?
Yeah.
He's pulled the wrong relay out. He's replaced the wrong relay. That's basically what has happened. Because you know why, that also your windows and your central locking, all those things also work off it's not a flasher unit, it's actually a relay, flasher relay. So you probably just replaced the wrong relay. I would suggest you put that relay back. The flasher relay should click when you put it on your indicator or your hazards or you know, something like that. You'll feel a slight click on the relay itself. Or else, I think, I'm not too sure, I haven't seen the diagram on those particular vehicles, but he's just probably pulled the wrong relay and put the wrong relay in. That's all I think it is.
Okay, JazakAllah. What about the symptoms of a CV joint failure? But what happens also, besides the symptoms, what happens if the CV joint has to, you know, break? What actually happens thereafter?
When a CV joint breaks, symptoms are, you know, the noises, the clicking sound as you come around the bend, especially when you take a sharp turn either left or right, you'll hear, you know, a consistent clicking sound, you know, click, 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 click. That would be a CV joint symptoms, that your CV joint needs attention. When a CV joint breaks, very, very simple, immediately you tend to lose drive. You will lose drive. The car might just roll on a little bit, but yes, you're going to get one nice big clucking sound. At low speed, yes, you'll get that. At a high speed, you know, it could be detrimental if perchance the shaft breaks from the from the gearbox side. It could be rather fatal, because what happens is if it is on a tarred surface and the shaft actually digs into the tarred surface, you know, it could be fatal, especially obviously speed related. If you've got quite good speed, you could actually throw the vehicle over. I would suggest don't ignore these sort of things. And while we're on the topic of CV joints, Marana, the other suggestion I've got is, please don't believe in anything as far as reconditioned CV joints are concerned. You know, don't go for any of those things. CV joint, put a new CV joint. Make sure that it's new, not a second-hand or a reconditioned, because all they do in the recondition is they clean the grease out and put new grease in the system, and that will keep it quiet for a while. The other thing, as far as the VWs are concerned, most of them, Audis, all of them got bolts that hold the CV joints down. If you had your CV joints worked on a VW or an Audi or something like that, make sure that the technician does make, you know, the bolts are tightened properly. You can actually, you know, after you've got your vehicle running, ask him if those bolts are tightened correctly, because a lot of times we are finding now especially with people in a hurry, bolts coming loose and the CV joints coming off. So yeah, it's very, very important that we ask questions and get proper answers and make sure the job is done properly.
Lovely. Abdulhak, sometimes you want to see if the valve is working, if all the four valves are working, or if there is, you know, there's no fire there, no spark there. What actually happens sometimes, you want to touch the spark plug wires while the engine is being cranked. Is it safe to do this, or will I see stars in broad daylight?
With the older systems, Mona, it was yes, it gives you a
it does shock. It gives you a bit of a shock.
Yes, it'll give you quite a quick. But with the newer system, with the high, you know, the high tension, very, very high tension nowadays, you know, I wouldn't say it's fatal, but if you've got a weak heart, it could be fatal for you. It gives you one good kick, Monona. Definitely. I wouldn't mess around with that. A lot of people try and feel all these sort of things. We like to make jokes.
If you use a cloth, will it help with the heart?
No, unfortunately not, because, you see, you get a special Bakelite plier. It's a Bakelite plier. Bakelite does not conduct electricity. So if you take the plier and pull that off and check it, yes, you can do that. Or if you've got a decent rubber glove, you can do that. But you can't use, an ordinary plier, because if this insulation on the plier is not good, it's going to give you a quick kick. You're going to feel it. And what happens is, it's natural for anybody who's getting a kick to leave that instrument immediately.
Yeah.
And with the engine cranking or starting, if it falls on the fan belt or something like that, then you could be creating some issues for yourself. So, yeah, don't mess around with it. But yeah, if you want to mess somebody around, you can ask him to hold it while you're cranking it.
Okay, jazakallah. Let's continue, inshallah. The one SMS coming through, it says, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Golf 5 FSI automatic. When pulling off, there is a big jerk. Almost feels like something is going to come loose. Also, same in reversing with the car.
Just pulling off.
Yeah.
Does the engine give a jerk, or there's a couple of questions regarding this now.
I think the next SMS says, as cold it moves well, but once it's hot, the jerking happens. Feels like it's not changing gas smoothly. Please advise.
All right. So obviously you've got issues as far as the more than likely as far as the gearbox is concerned. Now, what happens is sometimes when the oil does warm up. And the actual components in the gearbox itself warms up. Some of them are, well, a lot of them are made of metal. Even if they're not made of metal, you're going to get a certain amount of expansion, and that's going to alter what we call your spacing within the gearbox itself. There could be a culprit in the gearbox itself. What I would suggest, though, is a gearbox oil change. Because what happens, like we said earlier on, people don't tend to service their gearboxes on a regular basis, and with old oil losing its properties, it's no more as hydraulic as it should be. So what happens is you tend to lose some sort of drive, or what's happening in his case, from what I'm understanding, when it gets hot and you're pulling off, it's actually thumping off. So there's a thump from within the gearbox itself. When you rev it up, it increases the pressure in the gearbox, the oil pressure in the gearbox, and it's just sort of catching into gear, and that's what's creating that thump and that jerk. So I would suggest that you do a gearbox oil change, and don't forget, we don't just do an oil change without changing the filter. You've got to replace the filter in the system as well, because the reason is there's a reason for a filter there also. Because what happens is you do have some sort of wear and tear on your gearbox clutches within an automatic gearbox has clutches as well, and those clutches are made up also of almost like a asbestos material, but it's made of something similar to that, and you get wear and tear on that. And yes, I would suggest that that you do a gearbox oil change first. Make sure you put the proper oil in. Don't go and just put any ATF in there. Like, for example, you've got your DSG gearboxes on the VWs. You go to the dealership, you go buy the expensive oil. It's about $100 for about a liter, I think, or if a little bit more than that. And I think the DSG boxes on those takes about 5 liters. I know it's going to cost you $500 for that oil, but buy that oil for $500 and buy the filter. You might spend $1,000 or $1,500 just in an oil change on the gearbox, but it will save you about 20,000, 25,000, 30,000 on repairing the gearbox.
All right, jazakumallah. Let's take our two callers, inshallah, thereafter we terminate the program. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Hello, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I want to know if I'm looking for, or at least my son is looking for, a manual gearbox for a Voyager.
Manual gearbox for a Voyager.
Yes.
I wouldn't say chicken teeth, but...
Sorry, I can't hear you.
I wouldn't say you're looking for chicken teeth, but it's going to be rather difficult. What is wrong with this old gearbox?
It's stuffed. It's not working.
It's not working. If somebody opened it, they had a look at it?
Yes, they had a look at it, but I think they did some adjustments there previously, and they don't know what's carrying on.
Have you tried all these gearbox spaces and engine gearbox spaces?
I've tried a few, but they're not available. Probably if you know of someone that, you know.
All right. What I'm going to suggest is after the program, get the number from the engineer and give me a call, inshallah, Monday. I will give you a couple of numbers, and then you can try them out.
Jazakallah.
JazakAllah, my brother. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Line number 4, we have another caller. Assalamu alaikum.
Line number 4, we have another caller.
Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum
assalam. Gee, all right, my brother. Okay, can you hear us now?
Hello, bye. You're live on air?
Okay, the brothers, the engineer says just wait a few seconds. We have limited time. It's 8:53 p.m. We're taking our last calls. Inshallah, we terminate the program thereafter. All right, do we have the brother? How is Ismail? Okay, anyway. Okay, here we have him. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Hello, boss. How are you?
Alhamdulillah, how are you?
Alhamdulillah. With Allah's good rest.
See you, boss.
Nissan Almera.
Yeah.
You know, when you take off, it just, then after second gear or third gear, it's just normal. That is the cause of it.
Flash bearing, Abdulhaq.
What I feel, and common problem on the Nissan Almera themselves, is your pencil coils are more than likely starting to give in. Have you had a look at the pencil coils?
What is pencil coils? I don't know about this.
All right. Okay, if you don't know what a pencil coil is, then I suggest you find yourself a reliable technician and let him have a look at your pencil coil. Because immediately when you're pulling off, you're putting, I wouldn't say extreme pressure, but you're putting full load on the vehicle, and your pencil coils, either one of your pencil coils, are starting to pack up. And with the result, your spark is erratic. And spark being erratic, it's going to give you that jerk before you pull off. And that is 9.5 out of 10 on a Nissan Almera. That's what happens.
With
the pencil coil.
So
the pencil coil is exactly, it's what actually sits on top of your spark plug, and that Nissan Almera has got 4 pencil coils, each spark plug has its own coil, and unfortunately they are a little bit on the expensive side as well.
Oh, okay. So what is the best way? I must get another pencil coil.
Don't just go buy a pencil coil. First, get your technician to have a look at it.
Oh, okay.
You know, otherwise, you know, you can test them which one is actually the culprit and replace that particular one.
So how do you test them? You take out the plug coil?
No, you don't just unplug the coil. See, this is what we were talking about earlier on.
Yes.
You don't just unplug those things. You know, we have the diagnostics, and I'm sure your technician's got diagnostics, and that will give you an idea exactly which one's giving you an answer.
Yes. Okay, JazakAllah.
JazakAllah, it's not a thrash bearing, but Haq wants to take off.
Sorry, Mark?
Will it not be the thrash bearing?
No. You see, what is happening is he's got a jerk. This is not a shudder. He's talking about a jerk. A shudder would be on your clutch itself.
Okay.
Clutch itself. And as far as the thrust bearing is concerned, if the thrust bearing is faulty, then you will get a rough bearing noise on the vehicle when you depress the clutch. When you leave the clutch, then the noise goes away. That would be your thrust bearing. When you leave your clutch and it's making a noise, then it's a bearing within the gearbox itself. So there's a difference between pressing the clutch in and out. But in his case, he says when he goes over to the second gear, then it goes away. That is immediate load on the engine, and that comes 9 out of 10 on a Nissan Almera comes from a faulty pencil coil or a pencil coil that's on its way out.
Okay, lovely. JazakAllah for the program, my brother. We learned a great deal of Al-Haq. We continue with Allah's permission next week, inshallah, same time, same place.
Inshallah. Next week, inshallah, we should have brother Ari with us. JazakAllah, Maulana. JazakAllah to all the listeners out there. I hope we've managed to help people out there. And inshallah, Maulana, until we talk again, we request special to us. And you have a wonderful weekend, Mona.
Inshallah, you too, my brother. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi.